Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. Here is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger in the Heartland in the bunker. And very quickly, we're expecting a call in here from Dennis Mahon, our roving reporter. I forget whether he was in the United States or some other country. He said he sure liked your reports.
Well, great.
Yeah.
He does. I mean, we both do one hell of a good job. Of course, you're a real pro at it.
Oh, let's get on with this stuff. What the hell's going on, Dennis?
Well, I'm broadcasting from my canoe in my backyard here.
On the Lake Gitche-Gumee?
I don't know if I ever sent you a picture of my compound, but we had 2 feet of snow on the ground, and then we had a couple inches. It's flooding everywhere. All the creeks are overflowing, and yeah, it's been pretty amazing.
Well, what everybody's waiting to hear is, did you ever get the deer out of your barn?
I put some hay out there. I want him to come back all the time. I mean, he's kind of he keeps our pony. We got a little pony that, of course, our horse died about 3 months ago. But
yeah.
The old pony likes that deer. They kind of like each other.
Well, maybe you could train that deer and put a saddle on that damn deer and go out looking for wetbacks. He with those big horns, he could really give him a goose.
That's right. Unfortunately, we've had 16 deer that hunters have gotten that tested. The law is that whenever you shoot a deer during deer season, you have to have them tested. It takes blood out.
Oh.
16 deer have had this chronic wasting disease.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's what makes that dangerous is it's that can go into your cattle herds.
Probably too many deer. You know, down here they're thinning out the herd because they're just thick around this town where I'm at here, and so they gave hunters a little extra deal or something. They killed 39 deer. I couldn't shoot one of them. Well, I could if I was really hungry, but I really wouldn't want to shoot a deer.
Yeah, well, venison is very good, but. If you're a good hunter, always gets a clean shot, an instant kill. But the thing is, I think chronic wasting disease has taken down the numbers because there's so many of them.
Well, last year across the road here on my neighbor's property, he had a couple of kids, one with his stepson, who ended up stealing stuff off of him. But anyhow, I heard them banging away, and all of a sudden they're running down through on my neighbor's place, and they wounded this damn deer and went back in the woods, and finally, I had to get permission from the lady that owned the property that we used to own for them to go down there and finish it off. But that's sort of sick, sad, you know, to wound them like that, and they crawl away and die.
Yeah, well, that's what we've seen when they get hit by cars.
Yeah.
You see them, the lucky ones get killed instantly, but some of them crawl off the road about 20 or 30 feet to a field.
Yeah. Well, most of those deers wouldn't have to be hit if people didn't drive like they're crazy.
Well, they should, yeah, they're driving 80 miles. You know, the thing is they should know that before dusk, just before dusk, and about an hour before dawn or half an hour, the deer are really active. You know, and so that's the time you really need to slow down.
Well, I can see it sometimes on the interstate, but these back roads, there's no reason to be traveling that fast. I mean, there is situations where a deer just pop right in front of you. There's nothing you could do. But if you're driving a reasonable, 40, 45 miles an hour, and if you've got, say, a block, you've got plenty of time to stop.
Yeah, they deserve. I mean, usually the deer tear these cars up pretty good too.
Yeah, they get revenge.
Anyway, the other day I was at Chase Bank. Chase Manhattan, the big Chase chain there. And actually, here's a mestizo wetback with his wife. Now, his wife was almost white. She was, the white blood. And the kid had black eyes, but was white skin. But the guy was just a dark-skinned mestizo. And anyway, they were trying to cash a $500 check.
Uh-huh.
They tell her, well, I need to have an ID. No ID.
Blah, 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 yeah.
And then I said to her, well, she pointed to the woman, do you have ID? No ID. And then she said, the teller said, well, did you drive a car here? I drove a car. I drive. Well, don't you have a driver's license? No, I don't have a driver's license. So finally, I had my ice hat on with my blue bomber police jacket. And I said, Immigration Customs Enforcement, Immigration. Yeah, that son of a bitch, he looked back at me. And he grabbed his wife, and they grabbed the kid around that bank as fast as they could, and they got in the car, and hit a goddamn stop sign on the way out. But I wish, I only wish I could have had my video camera, but I didn't have it with me. But it was the funniest thing. And the gal said, "I'm glad you did that," but he really reacted. Yeah. I wish I could have got a driver's his tag number because I would have turned him in for, you know.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis, have you opened up your new office there for Obama for president? Because I've got mine open now.
Yeah.
Why not? I think Obama's got to be. We need a president like Obama.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to call the Democratic headquarters in Rockford to see if I can get some yard signs and shit.
Yeah. Tell him that the insurgents, you know, the old white Aryan resistance, has decided to back him because he belongs to a totally racist church there in Chicago. I mean, if you go to their website, it's just. You know, if you change the black to white, the government would be all over him.
Sure.
But anyhow, also, and his father, after he did impregnate a white woman, which was his mother, he got pissed off and left the country and joined up with the Mau Mau over in Africa. So, and they were running whites out of Africa, and that's okay, run them out. Whites shouldn't be in there at all, you know, the hell with it, you know. And he's the only racist that I see running traceable to being a racist.
Yeah.
Now, Ron Paul, have you heard some of the things that he's been saying? All these right-wing racists like Duke and Black are, you know, sending him money, and I'm seeing it all over the place, all these right-wing sort of, they're marginal racists, you know.
Yeah.
And they're all sending him money. Well, it says here, Republican Ron Paul was questioned on CNN about a racist newsletter that went out in his name 15 years ago. Paul, who did not write the letters, had already accepted moral responsibility for not paying more attention to what went out in his name. Well, it probably was him, but anyhow, the issue came up again in the New Republic magazine. Well, then Paul said, Rosa Parks is one of my heroes.
Oh.
Martin Luther King is a hero because they practiced the libertarian principle of civil disobedience. Nonviolence, he continued, racism is a collectivist idea. You see people in groups. Well, we ought to outlaw groups, you know. Civil libertarians like myself see everybody as an important individual. It is not the color of the skin that's important. As Martin Luther King said, it's the character that's important. There you go. That's Ron Paul.
I would like to see an Obama Sharpton ticket.
Yeah. I'd have rather seen a Khalid Muhammad ticket, but we can't bring him back to life unless the baby Jesus comes around.
God damn it, kill them all.
he's the only honest black man that I've run into for a long time.
Khalid Muhammad, he was so radical, even Farrakhan had to get rid of him.
Yeah, in fact, Farrakhan was afraid of him, just like Farrakhan was afraid of Malcolm X.
Sure.
You know, I'm sure that Farrakhan's people did Malcolm X in. I mean, you know, I don't have the evidence in front of me, but it's logical who stood to gain.
Yeah. Oh, I need to tell you an experience I had at this grocery store.
Besides, I like red-headed Negroes.
Yeah, that's kind of
good. He's Irish.
Irish chick.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
I'd like to say an experience to your audience that I had at the grocery store. I go to, there were several of them, but this one here. Anyway, somehow, this black woman had three kids, and she had two carts full of food. She paid with food stamps. And I said something like, gee, I guess white guys, have a hard time getting that. You got to be an alien or something else.
Yeah.
And then this one liberal, he was packing groceries. He said, well, we were illegal at one time ourselves. I said, what do you mean? Well, we stole the land from the Indians.
Well, let's give it back then. Does he want to give back his house to the Indians?
That's what I said to him. I said, well, you know, we conquered the Indians. And now they got a lot of casinos. But you know something? Don't you give me the title to the deed to your house and the title to your car, and I'll make sure I go to an Indian reservation and, you know, they can come live in your house.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Well, come on, put your money where your mouth is. You love the Indians so much.
Yeah, right.
And I said, by the way, guy, if they would have conquered us, I don't think they would have had any reservations for us.
No. We'd have had to make reservations in some other country.
But, you know, that son of a bitch back in groceries, I was going to say, guess what, buddy? Some of you aliens are going to take your job.
Well, let me tell you a story, and I probably told you a long time ago, but some of the new people may not have heard it. Well, I was doing a radio show down at Phoenix one time. And the guys started calling in and giving me hell about, what we did to the Indians and all that stuff. And I told him, I said, you know, when Geronimo was cornered, he only had 25 Indians that had the balls to stand up to the U.S. Army. All the rest of them took the blankets and the food and went on the reservation. But anyhow, I said, well, I want to try something out here. I asked the moderator, can we find some garbage cans around here? And he said, yeah. I said, well, let's bring them into the studio here. I want to tell everybody while I'm on this show to come on down here and let's fill up these garbage cans with money. And I'll personally go with you out to the reservation and deliver the money to the Indians. So I was on an hour or so, and of course nobody came down to even put a quarter in the damn nail. So it's, you know, Americans are the biggest lying hypocrites I've ever seen, and they've learned it from their government, I guess.
Yeah, or the churches.
I had a woman say something like that last night. She said, well, I'm a 1/8 Indian. I said, well, hell, if you had a nosebleed, you'd get kicked out of the tribe. She said, I guess you're right.
Tom, you know, I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma for 10 years about, and I had a hotline. I think my hotline was second to yours in longevity. But I used, you know, Oklahoma's full of Indians.
Yeah.
And I, of course, I'd always get these hate calls about, you goddamn racist, you stole the land from the Indians. And I said the same thing you did. Well, I'm in the phone book on my College Avenue.
Yeah.
And I've got some 55-gallon drums on here, and I'll go ahead and spray paint for the Indians.
Right.
Y'all come over here, throw your diamonds in there, your jewelry, your gold, silver, anything of any value.
Now, remember, you'd have to guard those 50-gallon drums because the Mexicans and the niggers would have stole all that money for the Indians.
Well, I kept my dog staying next to it, but
yeah.
I actually did put the thing out there, help the Indians.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was out there for 2 months. I never got even as much as a dime. The Indians.
Yeah, well, though, the question is, who did the Mongoloids take it from? They're not Indians, of course. You know, the Indians got a dot on their head. So that Columbus really screwed us up. But wait a minute. Now, they came down here through the Aleutians many, many moons ago. How do we know that these Mongoloid Asians didn't push out somebody else?
Well, yeah, but they found a skeleton in the Northwest that was, I think, 3,000 years old.
Right.
And the Indians are really trying to shut this up because it was definitely an Aryan skull, a long, long skull, narrow.
Yeah, well, there was a wave of Aryan Viking settlements in this country, started up in southeastern Canada, and moved down the coast, and was far west as Oklahoma. There is a Viking settlement there. It's being preserved in Oklahoma.
Yeah, they got that runestone, the heathen runestone.
So what happened was, they began to move west, but then there must have been another super surge of these Mongoloids coming across the Aleutians and or whatever, wherever they came from. That's probably the only way they could have got here, and then overwhelmed them, or, you know, maybe they even interbred. I don't know. But the point is that this idea that somebody was here first, you know, and you're bad because you took it over. Well, it were millions of square miles of land that nothing was being done with at all.
Hey, Tom, I have to go back to my job here.
Yeah, I got to go, too.
Hey, still nice talking to you, and keep your boat ready for more rains, because you might need to wait for a while.
I got a couple of rubber boats here that, you know, I have to blow up.
All right, take care.
See you later. Bye.
Hey, Tommy, this is Cody from Washington. How you doing? So, I'm going to report to you what the status of the racial situation is up in my area in King County, Washington. It looks like there's a lot more people coming up here from California, specifically San Diego. And when you talk to them about the Mexican problem in California, they agree with you. It doesn't take much convincing. But when you talk to the locals, the people who've lived up here their whole lives, obviously they don't want to listen to what you have to say.
Well, you know the answer to that. Let the dead bury the dead. Yeah. Let the dead bury the dead.
Resident of Pennsylvania. I had a job that routinely ran me in and out of Philadelphia all hours of the day and night. And Governor Rendell wants to privatize the turnpike and toll Route 80, mostly to provide funding for the city of Philadelphia's SEPTA public transportation system. But I noticed in my travels in and out of the city, buses, trains, and trolleys in Philadelphia running empty all hours of the day and night. This doesn't make sense. You and I would never think of running our truck empty. We must produce a profit just to stay alive. Only public transportation can justify running equipment 24 hours a day that's empty. I suggest that Governor Rendell really wanted to do something positive for the city of Philadelphia. Why doesn't he privatize SEPTA? Let's see how long in a private system where they have to produce a profit, those buses, trains, and trolleys would run empty. You and I both know the answer to that. What was it one of the men that the Plymouth Foundation said? If a man doesn't work, he doesn't eat. Well, if you can't pay your own way, you should rely on the taxpayer to cover you. That's my thought. Thank you.
Chris, I am so glad you called, because you've pointed out some of the basic problems with the way Pennsylvania is spending transportation money. The state's own research shows how much waste there is in SEPTA and other mass transit systems in the state. But I bet even that study didn't hit the points that you brought home. If you don't want to raise the rates riders pay, then cut back. Cut back on the routes where buses run empty. Cut back the times that they run mainly empty. Cut something, but don't steal money intended for highways. You also bring up the idea of privatizing SEPTA. You know, if the state did try to privatize Philadelphia's mass transit agency, it's likely no one would bid. That's because in that system's current structure, there's no way for SEPTA to make a profit. Hell, there's no way for it to break even. It is a guaranteed money loser. Unless you jack up the rates so high, no one who uses it could ever afford to ride. Government is going to have to pick up the tab the way they're doing things now, and that means the taxpayers. The problem is, they don't want the taxpayers who are actually benefiting from the service to pay. They don't even want them to think they're paying for it. And that's why officials there are trying so hard to shift the financial burden onto truckers, rural residents, and other users of the interstates in Pennsylvania. Why? Many truckers are out-of-state residents, so lawmakers don't see them as a threat to getting reelected. And rural residents who depend on those highways are a far smaller group than the urban and suburban residents who ride mass transit. Now, let me throw in a point that I think needs to be made. I think a lot of truckers believe in mass transit. I think they see it as a way to take commuter vehicles off the road and unclog our nation's arteries. A single bus uses a whole lot less fuel as well than the 50 single-passenger cars that it replaces. But to those same truckers, it makes no sense for 18-wheelers to pay so commuters can get a cheap ride. No one is paying for truckers' fuel. No one is picking up the cost of highways for truckers. No one else is paying for truckers' tires or anything else on their vehicles or any other cost of doing business for them. But mass transit riders want truckers to pick up their bill for all of that and more. Pennsylvania does not have a highway funding crisis. I'm going to say that again. Pennsylvania does not have a highway funding crisis. They do have a mass transit funding crisis, and they have a massive misappropriation problem. It's time they spent some of their energy fixing the real problem instead of thinking up more ways to steal money from our nation's already cash-starved truckers.
Well, it's interesting to listen in on some of the trucker conversation, because there's a lot of middle America talk there with the truckers. You know, there's a trucker channel up on the satellite, and mostly all truckers call in. It's quite interesting. But you see what this fellow isn't saying, and what they're afraid to say? You know what it is. Public transportation in the city is primarily geared to third world non-white people. And it's so dangerous to get on a public transportation in the city that most white people are going to drive a car no matter how high the gas goes. I think they'd be driving a car with $10 a gallon because they're petrified to get on these things. So this is more of a, what I'm telling you, a black hole of every one of these big cities that is like a cancer on the rest of the community, the rest of the states. It's sucking. It's going to suck us dry. And it's all this, the big sheriffs is minority, so-called minority majority. and it'll continue like a black hole just keeps sucking everything into it, if you've studied astronomy a little bit. Just keeps sucking everything into it. And so the non-whites and the politicians in the cities are petrified to go up against the third worlders because they know they'll riot and burn a town down and burn out the stores and stuff. So the businessmen are all for talking about, we got to have mass transit, we have mass transit. They know what'll happen if there isn't some kind of mass transit. So you see, it's all on the horns of a dilemma. No one wants to talk about overpopulation, why your cities are growing in population, but they're deteriorating as a tax base as white people move out. But they're trying to figure ways of developing this privatization to tax the roads you drive on, even though you have paid for them years ago. And then tax they were talking about a 40 cent, I think about, what was 40 cent to added tax onto the truckers? Well, they said, well, they don't have any place to recoup that. Well, in some ways they do, the big trucking companies. That's all passed on to the consumer when you go to the grocery store or you go to the furniture store, because wherever the trucks have to take this stuff and their prices and overhead goes higher, they pass it along. So you see, there again, you've got the non-white, non-producing people of these black holes called cities that are going to suck the whole country into them. So once, look at Illinois. You got Chicago sucking in, it's gradually sucking in the whole state into the black hole. You got Los Angeles. You got San Francisco. You got New York. That they'll suck all the money out of the rest of the state into a black hole where they'll just have more children and more children and more children. Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible. There's three or four major roads, like in Indiana and Ohio, we're not allowed to take 80, 90 because the tolls are just so high.
Yeah, and if they toll 80 in Pennsylvania, I think, what were they talking about, like 60 cents a mile almost per truck?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's almost like, well, let's just collect money however we can and not worry about the consequences. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate the call. 800-288-9227. Let's go to Gary, also in Pennsylvania. I figured we get a few calls in Pennsylvania because the I-80 is a huge, but the possibility of towing, that's a huge issue. Gary, you're on the Midnight Radio Network. Welcome.
Yeah, who am I speaking to, Gary?
Yeah, Gary and Eric.
I live in Pennsylvania here, and I want to tell you a little bit about the federal funds and stuff that's been sent to Pennsylvania to fix these bridges and roads over here. The governor's taking this money over here and gave it to mass transit in your larger cities like Philly and Pittsburgh, Altoona, and Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
That's wrong. Our money went to that was meant to repair the roads, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they want. That's what they said they were going to do with the congestion pricing in New York, is that they want to take the money that isn't going to stop congestion and help repair and fund mass transit, because they don't make money on the mass transit because people don't take it. And so they need some way to continue to repair it, though, and update it and do whatever they need to do. But they're not getting any people off the road because of it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And get back to these tolls. Now, I'm an owner-operator. I work for one of the larger tank companies.
Mm.
As of about 3 years ago, We started backfilling the consignee or the shipper for the tolls, which everyone's paying the freight bill. They just started to backfill them.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think should have been done a long, long time ago.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's their out. Because they want our freight rates are based on the shortest routes, mainly, most of the time. And that incurs running a toll rig.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't have the best of both worlds, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Solid point.
Absolutely. And that's it. When the customers need, you know, demand that it's there on time, the most efficient way to get it is through a toll road. But it's also a little, you know, a little more expensive. They're going to have to pay that. That's their cost. And you're absolutely right. Should have been done a long, long time ago. But I think that at least when it comes to the billing of these types of customers, I think that needs to be itemized,
mm-hmm.
separated, to show. This is what's going on. These are congestion fees, tolling fees, whatever that type of fee, you know, so that, first of all, they have a better understanding of what they are paying for. And it's a constant reminder of what their legislators are doing. Because, hey, man, they always say to, you know, the truck driver, well, you're a transient, blah, 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 blah. And the legislators never give any attention to truck drivers because no one's from any particular state. You guys are all transients.
So I hope you see what I'm talking about. This is very important to our future and the future of the struggle, because this country is, all these pest holes, big cities are tied together by these highways and interstates and toll roads and so forth. And the truckers are the lifeblood to keep this thing going, keep the food in the stores. Now, as the states begin more and more to scramble to finance themselves, and the cities are doing the same thing, there's going to be a collision here. There's already a collision between the states and the big cities and the federal government. But you can see now, if you've been watching, Carlyle Group, and these people are, and Goldman and Sachs, and all these kind of people, they're having to do with buying up toll roads and turning roads into toll roads, because they see a virtual, a great boondoggle here, because, as you heard him say, that they had proposals there to get up to as high as 60 cents a mile on a toll road added on. So from our point of view, things are looking fine, because the pest holes are like, we have that book written by, that's The Biological Jew by Eustace Mullins, and it lays it out there very, very much to show you that the big cities, like New York and so forth, are like the anus on a body, where all the parasites gather around to feast off the nutrients that obviously exist in an area like that. And it's a very graphic comparison to what goes on in nature. So now this is going on all over the world, where the pest hole big cities are just sucking in everything. It's happening in China and India and all over the place, to where all the benefits of the corporate business that move into a country centralize it primarily in the big cities. And that takes people off the land, takes people off the farms and their little patches where they could eke out a living. So subsequently you get masses of people, teeming masses with tremendous slums like Mexico City that suck the country dry. And but this is where it probably will start some of your more violent upheavals. It'll be the cities and attempting and the federal government to try to help the big cities rape the countryside and pull in the money off of fleeing white people, more taxes, so forth and so on. which could lead to a very interesting situation as far as our struggle is concerned. Our propaganda should be oriented towards anti-third world cities, what they're doing to us, and at the same time recommending that good white people get out of these cities, and make your propaganda sort of like it's either them or us. It's either the big city pest holes or it's us, which would give a lot of people who don't have the stomach maybe for what we might have, but it'd give them the feeling of morality that they're going in and cleaning up things in the city, going to make things right. We got to, because if we don't, we're going to die out here, and they're going to send armies out in here, just like a marauding army, to collect off the land, raid our state treasuries and so forth. And then, of course, you have the black holes of the state treasuries. Now, what they're griping around here, what they're griping around is that property taxes, as usual, and all those kind of things. And recently, a small area that was 100%, almost 100% white, was hit by a tornado, and FEMA wouldn't give them any money. So I said in the paper, I said, well, maybe this particular town, Napanee is called, Napanee, Indiana. I said, well, I guess it's too white. And that gradually gets things across in people's minds. But what I would write letters to the paper and recommend, of course, they'll never do what I'm saying, but it's propaganda that gets out there that the state should hold back money that normally would go to the federal government in some kind of a locked-up fund, that the people could pay a lot of their federal taxes to the state, let the state lock it up and tell the federal government, look, we want this and we want that, or you're not going to get your money. Well, of course, that would cause the federal government to send the troops out, and that would cause the militias to rise up in the countryside. So you see where my thinking is going? Like I've said all along, economics will kick this off. Yeah, it's not going to be straight race that kicks it off. Well, I know we'd like it to be that way, but it's not. It's going to be economics. And that's why we must understand how it works. And we can create all kinds of true propaganda to describe what's happening of these parasite cities. And also recommending the good white people that are left in those cities get out. And then essentially we could say if a large city did not have federal support, if the federals backed off, well, it's not beyond the realm of possibility we could have a road warrior thing where the city is surrounded and put under siege. They could be starved out. I know this, we're a little premature with a lot of this, but you got to think out of the box. I try to think out of the box in the future, probably long after I've bit the dust. But as long as you understand the concept and even want to improve on that concept, it's we've got something going. This is why I believe that a lot of the propaganda should be put in the hands of truckers. Not too complicated of stuff, but I mean truck stops should be a prime area handing out literature. But not this white literature. I mean, white, what I mean is a literature that appears to come just from an organization. You're not going to get any place going out there and handing out literature, no matter how true it is, with swastikas and Klan crosses and all that stuff all over it. You don't even have to really sign propaganda. Some of the best propaganda, there's no sign of where it come from, because we're not interested in recruiting lots of people. We're interested in agitating. And so simple things like you can put out thousands of little pieces of paper and say, wake up, white man. Yeah, I used to have one that said they're taking your jobs, they're taking your homes, they're taking your future, you know. How about this one? They feed, we breed, or they breed, we feed. Now, you guys can go down to a, you can put hundreds of these on a little 8x11 piece of paper and go down to a local print shop and run them off. But make sure you print them on both sides, because that way, no matter how they fall, you'll be able to read them. I've noticed that it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. If you print something on one side, I think 90% of the time you drop it on the street and it'll be face down and blank sheet sticking up. I guess it's something to do with the weight of the ink or something. I don't know, but I know one thing. Whenever you put propaganda printed on both sides, and make it small, make it simple, make it slogan-wise, you know. Kilroy was here. Remember that? World War II? No, you wouldn't remember that. You're just a young whippersnapper. Yeah, wake up, white man, you know. Mm-hmm. Politicians are criminals, things like that, you know. And anybody can do that. Anybody can do that. We're not losing because there's not enough of us. We're losing because the ones we have aren't working. They're always waiting for some big shot, you know, big Oz, the Wizard of Oz, to solve all their problems. And they do come along. Oh, yeah, just join up with me, man. Follow me and I will win it for you. Bullshit. You got to do it. You got to do it. Now, did you see on the news that Pat Robertson, that maniac on the Christian outfit, he's... Oh, we got signs we're going to Christianize every Chinaman in China. Jesus told me that. We're going to have, we're going to recruit all those Chinamen to Christianity. Oh, jeez. Well, if that were possible, it would be terrible. But I don't think the Chinese are that stupid. And you thought that the ragheads and the Jews would be at each other's throat in this country as they become more and more vocal part of the population, building their mosques and synagogues all over the place? Well, listen to this.
There are 5 sessions, and of course, we're hoping that the dialogue and understanding is only the beginning of a greater relationship, that this is not only a trust-building exercise, but an opportunity to dispel misconceptions so that we can do what our communities should be doing together, which is good work for the broader community.
Now, there obviously will be difficult topics for discussion in these gatherings. Do you have any idea how the groups will discuss the conflict in Israel?
I don't know. It will be... it obviously can't be off the table. It will be part of the discussion, but the focus is mostly on each community presenting itself, its own beliefs, clearing up misconceptions. We're not trying to solve the Middle East peace conflict with these discussions. The focus really is on our conceptions of who we are, our own history, where we feel our identities and our religions have been misportrayed. And with that, you know, with more accurate information, then I think we can at least have more informed conversations, if we choose to do so, about the conflict in the Middle East.
What's the best way for listeners to State of Belief to get material about these programs?
They can contact either the Union for Reform Judaism, or they can contact ISNA's Office of Interfaith and Community Alliances in Washington, D.C., and that the contact information is available on our website, ISNA.net, ISNA.net. Call them up and ask them for information.
I'm speaking with Dr. Ingrid Mattson, who's president of the Islamic Society of North America, and I want to touch as well in our conversation on an event at which we will be together this coming week at the Museum of Jewish Heritage. It's a panel discussion co-sponsored by the Interfaith Alliance on the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. When I say the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., what do you think of when you hear those words?
I, I think of Martin Luther King Jr. as the person who exemplifies the best of ethical leadership, moral leadership, by an American religious leader, as a person who united religious leaders as well as others in one of the most important causes that the United States has ever seen, which is the cause of civil rights and human rights of the people of this country. His legacy just continues to grow every year, and what's really remarkable about Martin Luther King Jr. is that everyone feels that they have a part in that legacy, that they are heirs to what he did. And we see the beautiful cascading, continuing effect of the message that he gave, of the methodology that he used, and of the coalitions that he built. The Muslim community looks to Martin Luther King Jr. as someone who unambiguously we can hold up as a role model for our community.
Well, there's some static on there. You got to understand, sometimes I'm not in the ideal situation to record, but I want to get it. And I think it's more important that we get it, even as long as you can understand. Now, that's the Muslims now in this country teaming up and having the joint meetings with the Jews, Reformed Jews at least, and also they're joining up with the Christians, this interfaith alliance stuff, and they're all going to worship up to Martin Luther King. And what this is just, you know, it's shit's being dumped in stream, in the river, upstream, and it's all come floating down to you. Because here again, and most of this stuff takes place in big cities. All these well-funded outfits are in big cities. And that's where they dump the shit, and then it goes into the river, floats down into your countryside. Yeah. Now, do you remember the film Escape from New York? How they had sealed off Manhattan and made it a high-priority supermax prison? Well, it doesn't take too much remixing of that film to show you what we're talking about in the future. When these cities become so bad, they have to be cut off. And, of course, if these cities go bonkers and the food supply stops coming through and all that, well, then the countryside people are going to have to do something, right? You get where I'm going here. You get where I'm going. And don't tell me, well, it ain't happening. I ain't seen that. Some of the guys call in there, well, that ain't happening. Well, of course it's not happening now, but if you want to happen anytime, you got to start thinking of it now.
Very articulate statement by the recent letter writer to you, Tom. And I believe the death of the evil American empire is at hand, although at hand could be anywhere from 18 months to the 12th of November. Worse is better. Take care.
TT, very interesting. If you're around, can you pick up? Okay, I guess you're not. This is Josh in Kentucky. I just had three quick things I wanted to run by you. First thing is, you're talking about that I Am Legend movie. I read the book a couple years ago, and it's pretty funny the way they changed it, because it was set back in South Central Los Angeles back in the early 50s when it was still all white. There's one big change. And the second thing was obviously the guy was white. So the original book was written by Richard Matheson, and it's a really good book if you ever get the chance to read it. Second thing is, I don't know if you've seen this thing, but they have the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding has recently announced the launch of a campaign aimed at fighting anti-Semitism titled I Am a Jew. It's being spearheaded by Rabbi Mark Schreiner and hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons. Simmons plans on recruiting A-list celebrities like Leonardo DiCaprio, Beyonce Knowles, Samuel Jackson, Richard Gere, blah, blah, blah. So, looks like the the Jews are getting kind of worried. They got to have some major stars come out there to bat for them, try to brainwash everybody into thinking they're okay. And third thing is, I went to Hal Turner's website this morning, and he's not there anymore. He said he's separated from the pro-white movement. I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Have you talked to him about this? You know, what's going on? I mean, I'd like to get your thoughts on that. All right, thanks.
Well, it's sort of funny that the Jews want to stop anti-Semitism because they're so arrogant they don't even admit that a sizable amount of the population of the Middle East are Semites, and most of them are not Semites. Or at least the Semitic part of them they left behind a long time ago. So it's sort of really crazy that a group of people running Israel, primarily from Europe, that claim to be Semitic, and some probably are, but I'm talking about, I think they've lost their Semiticism a long time ago, and they have the gall to say we got to stop anti-Semitism. Well, then they should be treating the Palestinians better and all those Semites over there that they're cousins. They're mistreating their own family, according to what they're saying. So I think it's amusing, man. It's just, it shows you how they can twist words around to where, you know, words mean almost nothing to people anymore because they don't understand what the hell a word means. I mean, why don't they say they want to stamp out anti-Jewism and just get to the point? Well, they're not going to do that. No, not as long as the Jews keep acting like they're acting, or at least the leadership of the Jews, you can guarantee they're going to be still anti-Jewism around. Well, I haven't talked to Brother Hal. I wish him well, unless he happens to go over the other side, which I don't think he probably would. But anyhow, I don't know what to say. I think Hal came to this with much higher expectations of the support that is available from masses, especially when you're talking right-wing rhetoric, racism. That right wing are cheaper. They're the cheapest people around. And I think Hal thought he could, live decently and do what he thought was a good thing. But I know from decades past that there's only a few people that involve themselves in this that really contribute on a regular basis. Most of the people are just camp followers, and then they'll say, well, you must be a Jew if you want any money to finance your operation. That's weird, you know. But anyhow, it's Hal, I think, learned that appealing for money in the right wing is a lost cause. I don't know. There may be some draining off quite a bit of it. I don't know. I've always approached it from the concept that I'm surely never going to get rich and never live high on a hog. I'll drive my old car, live in my little old house out here, and I'll have my dog, and I'll have my friendly horse next door, say hello to in the morning, and I'll be happy, but I'm going to do what I want to do, whether I got a lot of money or not.
Yeah, hello, Tom. Yeah, I just had a hypothetical situation question. So what do you think would happen in one of these major cities like Chicago or New York, if the power went off and the water, the utilities were all gone for a week or so, what do you think would happen in one of these cities? Some of those tension wires go on for miles. What if one of those supposed terrorists would take one of those tension wires down? You know, it's just one of those hypothetical things. But I think that's what the military does when they go and invade a country, is they go after the utilities first. I don't know what you think, but the other thing is, too, is this election stuff is really crazy. You see these people giving speeches, and all the people are all there screaming and yelling, thinking, what do these people think is going to happen? Do you think their taxes are going to go down if Obama comes in or Hillary comes in? No, your taxes aren't going to go down.
they're just going to keep pissing your money away. These people, you got to understand, your life isn't going to change for the better. It's still the same system. They're never going to give us free health care or take care of us the way they should be doing. But I think you're right, yeah. It's the only way to make change is going to have to be through violence. I mean, that's the only way it's been done. I don't know. Well, that was just me ranting.
Well, that's why I say there's no real militant terrorism, so-called terrorism, going on in this country. Of course, like I say, I don't want to call it terrorism. It's simply unconventional warfare. There's really no unconventional warfare going on except maybe the gangs in the cities, the black and Mexican gangs, committing unconventional warfare against each other, like drive-bys and so forth. But, well, we absolutely know what happened to any major city or any city of any size if suddenly the electricity was cut off, the water was cut off. You don't even have to shut off the water to shut off the electricity. And look, if there's a truck strike, the truckers could bring this country to its knees in 48 hours. I mean, if those trucks stop running that food into the big cities and putting it into the grocery store and even some of the smaller towns, it would be total menagerie in a very short few hours. Number one, the people, once they knew that was going on, they'd raid every grocery store. And, of course, you'd have the blacks and you'd have the Mexicans and even the white trash that are still hanging into the ghettos in these big cities. They would be stealing everything they could get. I mean, if it happened in more than three or four cities, well, the military couldn't handle it. See, a lot of people don't remember back in the, when was it, in the, well, after Martin Luther King was sent off to his reward. There were riots in Detroit, there were riots in Newark, there were riots in Los Angeles, there were riots in several places in Washington, D.C. Well, it came out afterwards that they had, you know, even with the troops in the country, and there wasn't a war going on at the time, as I recall, they were running so short they could not have had enough military to bring law and order to any more cities. They were stretched so thin. They were using 101st Airborne, 82nd Airborne, and so forth. And they admitted that it almost got away from them. If the rioting would have gone on into half a dozen more cities, there would have been a total insurrection. And in some ways, it's too bad it didn't. Sometimes some things the blacks do might turn out to be good in the long run, because that give the other side an excuse to do what they're going to do. No, they can shut down. Look, if there was any Al-Qaeda around wanting to do something, they'd have been doing it a long time ago. You know, they throw log chains over high-powered lines. They toss flares out of cars through these forests and stuff. And, you know, who knows? Southern California, where all the fires were here last year, that was mostly illegal aliens. Yeah, starting campfires out in the boonies, and to keep warm, and then it gets out of hand, and away it goes. But I said a long time ago, if any foreign terrorism wanted to do anything, this is the easiest country in the world to turn upside down. It's so high-tech that it's muscle-bound, you know. Reminds me of the time that several of us had gone to court and went down to the train station in Los Angeles. Richard Butler was there and a whole bunch of us. And JDL attacked us. And it's funny because one of our guys... these two great big weightlifters came through the door, or they're going to block the door, so we couldn't get out on the floor to help one of our buddies they were beating on. And one of our guys had a switchblade, and he showed that switchblade, and boy, those big muscle-bound Gold Gym Jews, they were out of there in no time. They were gone in a flash, man. It was like Moses separating that Red Sea. So that's what this problem, you know, you can be technologically advanced to the point where you're muscle bound, you know. And now they're even overdoing it, like with stop signs, stoplights. You know, they're taking pictures and catching people for running stoplights. But now they say there's a hell of an increase in rear-end collisions because people screech to a halt on yellow, and the guy behind them is expecting them to go through, and they get smashed. So low-tech can beat high-tech, or at least it can really bring it to its knees. And I don't have to tell anybody what you could do. I mean, there's plenty of books around and just common sense. So anyhow, yeah, any city in the country could be brought to its knees in 48 hours. And that was simple weapons. That's why I don't see why everybody gets so despondent and down in the dumps. I mean, we've got the power when we decide to use it. We've got it, baby. It don't take tens of thousands of people. It don't take that many people to raise hell, man. So when we decide to use it, we can do it, baby. And you can bet on that.
Hey, TT. It's me, Lone Wolf Chris. It's been a while. Not much been going on down here. I've been working mostly on a really shitty job. And isn't this nice? I had there's a lady who we work with from Mexico. She's a Mexican citizen, and she gets to come up here every month and work and take the money back down to Mexico. And she does this, and they hold her job for her. Isn't that nice? but I know, you know, she's not the enemy. Well, I mean, of course she is, but she's not the main enemy. You know, it's the jackass that hired her in the first place. You got to keep that in mind. I think you're also absolutely right. Way back, we had Lone Wolf Lead on when you said to her, no matter which way we aim, we're always hitting an enemy. I was listening to that last night on my iPod. I thought that was great. It was classic. I'll try to get a hold of you some other time, and maybe it could be on your show again sometime. Just let me know.
Well, yeah, that comes from that statement by an American military officer in World War II. He was totally surrounded, and his adjutant said, "What do we do now?" He said, "Well, hell, we got them right where we want them. We can fire in any direction and hit one of them." And that's true. That's true, man.
Went to the library over in Oakers, California, and I was going to check out your website and shit, and they said it was too racist and too intolerable and too extreme, and like all the other white power sites you could not get on. And they all say that the First Amendment is so great.
Yeah, I think it's the ADL and these Jew groups that supply these libraries with those programs to keep you horrible racists from getting into the minds of little kids and stuff. That's a waste of time. That's a waste of time, because the more you make it taboo, the more people want to get it. Haven't they ever learned that? I mean, you know, you tell a kid he can't do this, and that's the very thing he wants to do. Making racism taboo is the greatest boon for us that ever came along. I hope they do it. You know, shut them down. Don't let them talk, man. Well, wait a minute. What's he saying? I want to hear that.
It's my belief that everyone who calls into this telephone hotline needs to be actively doing whatever they can to destabilize the system. I heard you say a long time ago, Tommy, that there are many types of power. There's economic power, military power, media power, political power. We white racists have disruptive power. We need to be the monkey wrench in the gears of the machine. Everyone needs to be doing their part. Just use your imagination. 88.
Well, in fact, monkey wrenching is what they called it back in during the Vietnam War, and when the leftist people were doing some things, monkey wrenching, yeah, and a lot of the environmentalists do it too. Well, a part of that is our position of, you know, worse is better, you know, and there's some books have been written about that, on how you get into the system, and the system does things that make it worse, and then the undercover guy makes it even worse, to where the people finally rise up and rebel. Just remember, these same dumbed-down masses that get up there and clap like trained seals at election time, knowing really nothing about the real intricacies of the laws and so forth and the politicians they're yelling for, they can be turned around through emotionalism and things like that and head the other way. It could be a while, but it can be done. It'd be a waste of time right now because we're not ready.
Hey, Tom Metzger, that was a great message. I'd just like to say, too, that I was in the military not too long ago, and I noticed that, you know, my dad retired back in the 60s, but I'll tell you what, man, I was in there, and I can't believe how many foreigners, and you don't even got to be a citizen to be in our military, and I'll tell you what, I'm white, and I felt like a minority in there. It wasn't a very good feeling, and a lot of the average citizens don't know what's going on our industrial military complexes because they're not even allowed on there if they only knew, you know? Okay, out.
Well, that's why it's good that we've got so many people covertly operating inside the military. Many of them, in fact, almost all of them, don't know each other, aren't going to reveal each other to each other in the whole bit. So that's something that's got to keep some of these military people and politicians up at night. No racial tattoos, no racial literature, no yelling about your racial views. You just go in there, dig in, get the training, and, well, come back home. We need you. Well, that's it for today, Saturday. Get your dues in for the radio show. Try to get them in by the first of the month each month, and that'll make Tommy very happy. And just remember, most people are always wrong when it's most important to be right. And don't waste your pretty little heads worrying about this stupid, fraudulent election process. It's all a game. Don't waste your time. Don't waste your time. Don't worry about it. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Tom Metzger or The Insurgent. Happy hunting.